Hey, are you looking to experience something new? I am. Been fantasizing about surprising your partner with an adventurous new toy or inspiring adult movie? Always. Well, here's an offer that'll make it even easier to make your dreams come true. Go to adamandeve.com, and for a limited time only, you'll get 50% off just about any item. Oh, but that's not all. Oh, no. When you select that one item for 50% off, you'll receive 3 free adult DVDs, plus a free extra gift. So secret, even I don't know what it is. Ha! And to top it all off, and this is my favorite, they will even throw in free shipping on your entire order. I know, right? Free shipping. So all you've got to do is type in offer code SEXNERD at checkout. Get that dirty mind of yours to adamandeve.com today for this special offer. 50% off one item, 3 free DVDs, a free extra secret gift, and free shipping. Just use offer code SEXNERD at adamandeve.com. That's SEXNERD. Oh, give in to temptation, you guys. Adamandeve.com.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hey, sex nerd. Sandra here. You are in for a treat. This week's episode is so much fun. This episode was a surprise to me because I hadn't met the folks we're about to talk to before, but we have mutual friends, and I was like, this sounds interesting. So they made this documentary. I watched it and was like, this is great. I actually studied documentary filmmaking in college. I don't know if you knew that, but that is part of my what I studied. So I was just delighted at how much sex positivity and exploration of religion and what it does to us. And I myself am exploring my past and how growing up Catholic and going to a lot of Christian camps, there are some memories that have really shaped how I feel about myself and how I go through the world, for better or for worse, sometimes for worse. But negative note, hey, why am I so excited right now? Because, well, one, this episode's going to rock, but also I'm about to hop on a plane to go to New York to podcast tomorrow. And I've told you about this before, but it's with New York Super Week. New York Comic Con does events all throughout the city, and I get to podcast tomorrow. And it's going to be live on stage at Union Hall. You can go to NewYorkSuperWeek.com to look up tickets. They're $14. Please come out. If you hear about it, tell your friends. It's a... I'm only in town for like 36 hours, so, you know, I'm glad that we get to do this. I just scored a great guest that I've been wanting to podcast with forever, Melina Williams. She is the perverted negress. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that, but that's what her website says. But she is like, you know how Paul F. Tompkins has the cake boss? She's like the kink boss. And she's really funny and delightful. And I myself am going through a bit of a renaissance in my kink stuff. So this is a really well-timed topic for me, because we're going to be talking about taboo and going into our edges, edge play. Melina knows, oh my God, just her list of workshops on her website. Anyway, enough gushing about something that hasn't yet happened. I'm just so excited for this really fun, juicy show that's happening tomorrow. And so glad that you get to listen to this talk about sexuality and religion and growing up and just how confusing and it can be, but how marvelous the journey and where it takes us. Was that a sentence fragment? Might have been. I like you. I'm available for workshops and teaching. Just give me an email at sexnerdsandra@gmail.com. I'm excited. I'm excited. Thank you. Thank you for listening. This is just a really exciting time for me. And I'm glad to share these interviews, these talks, these explorations with you. So thank you for tuning in. All right. Go Team Fun. Ha.
Welcome to the Sex Nerd Sandra podcast.
Whoa. What are these kids doing in here? Hey, if you're under 18, go ask your mom. Now that we're alone, let's start the show.
Hi, Matt Barber.
Hi.
I kept messing up your name in my head, and I kept calling you Matt Butcher and Matt Matt Butcher and Matt. There was another
Baker. Baker's another one, yeah.
And then it was like barber. So I kept thinking, I'm like, okay, he does hair.
I do hair. Now I have to admit that I'm a little bit nervous because I have to admit that I've had a huge crush on your voice forever. Ugh. And now I get to have a huge crush on the rest of you.
Oh my goodness.
So I'm a little nervous.
I'm nervous a lot of the time, period. So welcome to it. And welcome to my face and stuff. Hope it's okay. Sometimes people are disappointed. They're like, wonderful. Oh.
I didn't know you had a little, like, you have a little thing under your nose.
Yeah, I have a little nose ring.
It's, I like, super it. Cute. Yeah.
Thanks. It's a non-verbal way to tell people, don't fucking mess with me.
I'm not.
I'm tough. Yeah, not you specifically. I can tell that you're nice.
So I can mess with you.
Yeah.
I have a crush on you too.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Now that we got that out of the way.
Yeah. I have a crush on both of you now. Sexy time. Hey.
Consenting crushes.
Oh, crushing. Oh my God. Sorry, whenever it gets slightly flirtatious on my show, I like, my brain goes down and I'm like, I don't want to think about it. I get shy. Okay, focusing. So through a mutual friend, can we talk about Deirdre?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. So Deirdre is this rad-tastic writer for a TV show called iZombie.
iZombie.
Yeah, iZombie.
Crime-fighting zombie.
Yeah.
With heart.
I've watched a couple episodes and it's so good.
It's adorable, right?
Yes.
Yes.
And there was kind of a polynomonogamous theme in one episode that I really enjoyed. But she's not here, so why are we talking about her, right?
Yeah.
However, you directed an episode of iZombie.
Yes.
Right,
Matt? Yes.
And through a series of events, how did it come to be that we are now sitting here? And Brittany, we'll definitely get to you and stuff, but first, how did this happen?
Well, you know, if you've worked on a film set, there's a lot of downtime. It's very boring. It's very boring, kids. Don't go into filmmaking unless you have a high tolerance for boredom. And Deirdre and I, we have a really, like, we just had a really sort of fun connection. Like, we just became friends instantly. So there was just this comfortability. So we just started talking about our lives and talking about how you know, you grow up and then you were married at one point. Now you're no longer married. That's me, by the way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how sometimes, you know, things are messy when you're breaking up. And then she's talking to me about her current dude and all that stuff. I don't want to get into it because she's not here. But it just started talking about relationships, you know, and we started talking about the repression of growing up as an evangelical and sexuality around that. And that triggered her. She's like, oh, I want to know more. You know, I started telling her about the documentary. Mm-hmm. And somehow I can't remember. She was like, oh, my friend, his girlfriend is, you know, does this podcast about sex. Her name is Sandra. I'm like, sex nerd Sandra, oh my God. She was like, yeah. And so we started geeking out for a second that we both knew you, or both knew of you. I didn't know you at the time. And I'm like, I want to get on that show so bad. That's actually been a marker of success for me. Like, once I'm on Sex Nerd Sandra, I know we've made it.
Whoa, it's right now, it's happening. Tony, we did it. Yeah, I'm it's like make a wish for showbiz? I don't know what's happening.
But gold for stars. Gold stars for everybody. Stars.
Everyone's getting a gold star. Puffy stickers.
In this moment, I ask for a son.
Is that Bette Midler? No. Who is that?
It sounds like a worship song. From, yeah, it does, or huh?
Our two hearts are one. I don't remember. Okay. It's just good.
So that's really cool. And then Deirdre sent an email to my guy, mm-hmm. and included a note, and then I caught it, and then I couldn't make the preview or the premiere.
The premiere
of your movie, which I was so bummed about because I was doing like comedy shows and stuff, and it was like, oh, this night, why? I like premieres and I like Jesus sometimes. But then it was like, let's just hang out and we can talk about it. So here we are.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to let you not explain this one part of Deirdre's email where she mentioned that you two were talking about, and if this is super personal, I will totally cut this out, but I really hope you say no. It's okay. That you talked about, I wish I had the exact phrasing, visiting massage parlors because we're oppressed. Does that sound familiar to
yes.
you?
Yes. Maybe once. Maybe once. But that's as much as I'll say.
Okay. And what kind of oppression leads to going to a massage parlor?
Well, I mean, I think there's, I mean, in in the church, you see a lot of, you know, sexuality is focused on so much as a thing that you have to, like, you both want, and it's this thing that's going to make your life just go, wow, this is mm-hmm. going to be this amazing thing, but you have to do it in this narrow confine. And when it doesn't happen the way you think it should happen, mm-hmm. or it's not happening as quickly as you want it, or you're just kinky and you can't figure out a way to get those kinks, it sort of pops out in unhealthy ways, or, you know, or ways that it has to. So you see it like in like Ted Haggard, you know, snorting coke off rent boys, and mm-hmm. you see like the Ashley Madison scandal. You see like all these sorts of things where, you know, it's almost like water. Sex will find a way.
Yes.
You know? And so that's what happens. And so I think, you know, there is a high instance where like this is actually a true thing. Like at like pastors' conferences, this is back when porn was not on the internet, you know, whenever there'd be the altar call about like, you know, getting your sexual life right, you go in the trash can the next day, there'd be like, you know, bags and bags of porn, because all the pastors would be like, throw the porn out. I feel bad about
it. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And they can actually track purchases of porn usage go up on the date, time, and location of Christian conferences. Like, it's been well documented that porn usage goes up when people go to Christian conferences.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait. Like, there's so like after studies. You're told that, like, don't do the thing, then you go and you're like,
you purge. You say,
oh,
don't do
I
it.
See.
You purge, and then you clean yourself out, and you're like, oh, this is great. And then it sort of sneaks back in. You're like, well, maybe I'll just go to get this one magazine, or I'll go check out this one site.
So not like when they go to the hotel, like, is it simultaneous, Brittany, or is it like right after it peaks?
No, it's like if you're going to a conference in Chicago, like a Christian conference in Chicago, porn purchases in hotels in that area go up.
Oh.
So it's like when you go away to the conference, you're doing things that you wouldn't necessarily do at home, mm-hmm. or you're purchasing more or whatever.
Yeah. I've been to conferences. I mean, a lot of people like let off some steam in a hotel. Like, I've witnessed some stuff.
You call it steam, but yeah.
Yeah. Jesus is love.
No, and so I think that's why there's, I mean, even in my own life, since I grew up evangelical, I'm no longer evangelical, I'm no longer Christian, there still is that you know, I'm sort of processing my own sexuality, and a lot of that, you know, the movie was a process of me sort of letting go and sort of examining what I was taught, so I can get to a place where I can go, okay, now what is it that I really believe, and what does my sexuality mean? Mm-hmm. You know, so there's still a lot of that, and that's what sort of Deirdre and I were getting into, is like, you know, when you're married and you're a good Christian boy and you're just, you know, horny as fuck, and you just want, like, you just try to find ways to like release it, but then mm-hmm. you try to find ways in which it's like, you know, secretive, because you don't want to get outed by the community, you know, and it's both tragic and sad, and, you know, and I don't know, there's a lot of more adjectives we can throw in there, but
absolument. Oh. For sure. And I definitely want to talk about that more. So let's do our due diligence and Matt, tell people who you are and where what you do in the world.
Da, 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 da. I am Matt Barber. I'm a director, and I work in TV mostly. And I do an occasional documentary. Mm-hmm. You know, I did the music documentary a couple years ago, and I worked on Chuck and the OC and Forever, and now iZombie, The 100. So that's sort of me. And I also, but I've had this documentary project, Give Me Sex Jesus, sort of floating around in the sidelines for the past mm-hmm. like 4 or 5 years, and now it's out in the world.
Yay! Oh, I'm so excited! Can't wait to tweet the fuck out of it. I'm like, I'm getting ready now that I've watched it. Brittany, who are you? What do you do in the world?
I am also in TV, but it wasn't always. So I'm an academic turned TV person. So I really am a nerd at heart.
Yes.
And so right now I work at Warner Brothers. I work in the television workshop. So I work to develop writers and directors. Mm-hmm. And I work on a couple other projects with them as well. So that's very exciting. But I was working in academia for a long time, doing public opinion research. I was teaching undergrads and doing all sorts of stuff. And then I defected into film and TV. So oops.
Oh, that's so hot. Oh, that's so hot. Sorry, she's winning now. You know, I really have a passion for like research, and I'm starting to think about like, should I just like go into market research? I really kind of like that stuff.
It's interesting.
Oh, yeah.
I was telling her about, I'm going to like flash forward to another episode. I was listening to yours. It was like a sex party setup thing. And
oh, yeah.
your first question was like, how do you plan a party? You know? And it's like this nerdy, it's this sweet, nerdy research question. Like I told her about this. She goes like, I love her.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. I'm having a birthday party. Actually, that you're totally welcome to come to. It's going to be before this is even released. But, or maybe not. Yeah. But my plan when I want to have a birthday party is I just go, I'm going to go to this bar and get drunk. You are welcome to join me. Like that's the most that I can do in
my
life.
We do that well. We do that well.
Yeah.
That's okay. A really good way to do a birthday.
Yeah. Thank you. And the title is Sandra Gets Drunk for Her Birthday. That's the Facebook invite. Like I can't handle any more than that. Go, there's an ATM. Go have fun.
Do what's good for you and your body.
Yeah.
Consensual party.
Consensual party. It's you're choosing to walk into the space. Who knows what'll happen? All right, I'm sorry. I'm pulling up my notes because I have so much to ask and stuff. And so you both worked on this film, right?
Yes.
And this is your baby.
Yes.
And so you got it started. And are you like the guy who wears all the hats?
I wear a lot of hats, but there are a lot of people that worked on this film. But it sort of started out as a... I was trying to make a little promotional documentary for a feature film I wrote that was sort of dealing with some of these themes, and so I decided I'm not going to touch you unless you.
You're welcome to touch me in non erotic areas.
There we go.
Haha, just kidding, because the whole body's erotic.
Oh no!
Boom.
She was just looking at my hand because I'm a hand watcher. I'm gesticulating. Yeah. On the desk.
I'm a T-Rex. I watch hands. It makes people feel
comfortable. Oh, we tried T-Rex cooking the other day. So I basically, I came up from behind him and I bound the tops of his arms so he could only use T-Rex arms to cook.
That's hilarious.
It was hard.
It was very hard.
It's awesome though.
Do T-Rex sex. Wow, so, that's good. I like that.
So I was trying to make a little mini documentary to sell the feature film. And you know what? People like to talk about sex, and it started to become a thing. And I thought for a long time, like the feature film was me processing my own issues. And I thought, oh, I'm in this weird little subset of people. And as I started doing this documentary, I realized I'm not. I'm in a major subset of people who are trying to figure out their fucking sexuality and dealing with repression. And a lot of people, I say a lot of us, because you know, I still identify with evangelical culture, even though I'm not evangelical anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, they're my people. I get them. I know exactly what's going on.
Like
in
acoustic
head.
Rock, like which parts of the culture?
Like, are you laughing at acoustic rock?
You're
like,
she keeps laughing silently. You know, like that doesn't, you're allowed to make noise, just FYI.
My laugh can be annoying sometimes. I'm trying to
let it out.
Mitigate it.
I just lean back. Ha 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 ha. Like that. That was perfect. Okay, I'm sorry, back to you. Oh, I touched you.
Oh, you touched me, okay, there we go, one for one. Now we gotta return the favor over here to Brittany.
Uh-oh. Ooh.
So it's like, the purity culture, the focus on heaven, it's hard. I mean, Brittany, you're better at this. Why don't you boil down evangelicalism into like a little nutshell?
Well, just kind of going back, I think, to the question was, so Matt started the project interviewing people, and it really picked up steam, and he started to expand it into a feature documentary. And so, but he was looking for some academic underpinning.
Yeah, I was just I was just interviewing. It was just stories. But I'm like, we need to explain the history, the sociology, you know.
I loved the history section. That was really tight.
That was my baby. Thank you.
Ooh.
Thank you. Yeah, so like I said, I'm a total nerd. So I actually had gone to the University of Chicago, got my master's degree, and I specialized in evangelical identity and sexual identity. So religious identity, sexual identity. And I moved back to LA. I got introduced to Matt, and I came onto the project. And basically, my academic findings were supporting what he was seeing through his work. And so I had never worked on film ever. And I just came on, and I totally loved it. And I, at the time, was like so on fire and just in love with all of these academics I was reading. I was like, what if we interviewed them? And what was so cool was like, we were really excited about the project, but this is one of those things where like naivety is totally on your side. Mm-hmm. Cause I just cold called everybody. And I was like, do you want to be in my documentary? And they were like, yeah. So we interviewed some really awesome people.
And we jumped on Kickstarter. We raised like $30,000.
Oh, great.
Yeah. To travel the country. So
this isn't, I mean, when I was watching, I'm like, oh, someone made this movie. Finally, this is important. So everyone should watch it. Find it on Vimeo, right?
Vimeo,
is that where
you would like Vimeo. It? Vimeo. Or givemesexjesus.com.
Oh, and actually today we were Vimeo's staff pick and we are like, our emails are blowing up right now.
I'm sitting in a meeting today and I'm getting Vimeo like after Vimeo like. I'm like, what?
Where
the hell did all this come from? Mm-hmm. And then I looked on, like, they chose us. We're on their front page right now. So,
thank you, Vimeo. Yeah. I really like them.
They're great. Yeah.
Is there a point where the film will then go to a payment model, or will it always be free in Vimeo, or what are the deadlines for people?
At this point, it's completely free.
Okay.
You know, we're going to start looking for some TV distribution, but we decided to put it for free partly because Kickstarter funded it for us. Mm-hmm. And we also realized that in order to find a distributor, it would take another like year or 2 years to get all the things in line and everything. And we just wanted to get it out there.
Yeah.
You know, and since people paid for it, like, let's just give it back to the people. So if someone out there in TV land wants to like buy it for TV, we'll give you an hour version of it. But for now, it's an hour and a half. Enjoy it.
Please put it on TV. It was really entertaining. I was drawn in immediately. Hi, two thumbs up, Sandra says. Okay. Like, that matters. Okay.
It matters.
It totally matters.
Two thumbs up and a nose ring.
Four golden clits. Okay. That should be
it. There you go. I think we just came up with your awards. That's it.
That's so fantastic.
Oh, man. A golden clit and a... What? I don't know, like penis beacon? I don't know what to, I don't know. You get the very prized intersex award. Yeah.
What if we do like clit with little balls? So it's like embracing both.
Many things.
Yeah.
Many things.
Right. It was like,
that's weird.
It looked funny in my mind, but I was into it. It looked very Rick and Morty to me, like some like odd alien species.
Yeah. Rick and Morty.
Oh, it's like Back to the Future meets Ren and Stimpy. It's animated. Ah. I think Dan Harmon's the showrunner.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Anyway, this is unimportant. Testicle clits in space. Okay, very exciting. So a lot of this is about keeping yourself pure of thought. No sexual thoughts, no sexual touching of yourself or others until you get married, and then you can have all the sex with your new spouse, right?
Essentially, yes. And there's always this question in youth groups, especially like, how far is too far? Mm-hmm. There's usually at least a sermon about that, like, you know, once every quarter. You know, how far is too far? Where is the line? Yeah, where is the line?
Oh, there isn't an answer?
No.
Because like, I mean, in Catholic school... we'd ask what the Holy Ghost was because it was unclear, and then it was like several answers, and no one really could figure out exactly what the Holy Ghost was. So is it like that where you
Scooby Doo with
getting...
a sheet on? That's what. Uh-huh. No, the hard thing is it's usually a rhetorical question back. It's like, you know, well, or they say, well, that's the wrong question if you're saying how far is too far. The real question is, are you walking with the Lord, and is He talking to you and telling you, you know, what's right and what's wrong?
Oh, it's so tiring.
I know. It's like it's a circular logic. Yeah. That's like
yeah. There is. You never land on anything, and it's crazy making it feels like, at least for my thought process is going into enough loops.
Oh. Well, I was going to say, just as an example, like when I was in college, right? I actually touched a breast once, right? We were watching this movie with Val Kilmer. Mm-hmm. And we're lying, on the couch, and we were, you know, getting all like kissy kissy. And I decided to like take a little peek, and she let me go for it. And I was kissing her tit, and then all of a sudden, I had this out of body experience. I'm like, oh my God, I'm sinning right now. So I ran away from her. Literally, like, I'm like, sorry, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry. And then I went into my room, and I didn't jerk off. I prayed. I prayed to God. I said, God, I'm so sorry. I went and told my youth pastor the next day. I said, look, this thing happened. And I'm sure to this day, he's probably like, oh my God, it's okay. But he had to do his pastor thing, which is like, you know what, just give it to God, and He'll forgive you, you know. And that was the mindset I was in.
That's so tight. I remember being super Catholic and hanging out with the Christian kids. Like, I remember all of that confusion. So I want the little mouge, the little you foreshadowed that you, Brittany. Is it Britt or Brittany?
You prefer Britt. That's totally fine. Britt, Brittany.
Oh, when he texted, he's like, "Oh, Britt will come." I'm like, "Cool."
Britt.
I don't know. what is evangelical? What is the summary of what that is?
Yeah, so evangelicalism is a form of Christianity. It's very American. Mm-hmm. And it
is really important to evangelical Christians, that they sort of spread the word. So when you hear of like missionaries going across to other countries to spread the gospel, that really comes from like an evangelical mindset. Mm-hmm. It's very much predicated on like that you are saved by grace, and that all sins are equal, which is kind of where sex becomes a gray area, because mm-hmm. they say all sins are equal, but sex really is like the worst sin that you could possibly commit.
Yeah.
And so, but it's communicated in these non-direct ways. It's sort mm-hmm. of understood, it's communicated and received as the worst sin, even though they're not saying it's the worst sin. So evangelicalism is like kind of synonymous with a lot of like weird sexual stuff, I think, mm-hmm. especially in the news. Like Matt mentioned Ted Haggard earlier, or like the Duggar family, mm-hmm. or all these people. But the thing is, evangelicalism has also really impacted it is American, like it's super super American. So evangelicalism is really tied into like American politics and American culture. So evangelical sexual norms kind of are American sexual norms in a lot of ways, with the morality distinctions and sort of the slipperiness around what is okay and what's not okay in terms of like our social sexualities. So yeah, so that's the short version. But a lot of people, it's not like a cult. Like most of the country is evangelical. And if you identify as a religion, you're probably evangelical. So it's the largest religion in the country. And you don't have to be super hardcore to like believe a lot of the stuff.
But I think one of the things that also serves as a marker is that, you know, in the Catholic Church, you have the Pope. The Pope is kind of like the final say, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they say in the evangelical church, there's a million popes. Every pastor has the final say. And so a lot of times you'll have these micro interpretations of the Bible, which is how you can have churches that are both affirming, like some churches are affirming of you know, LGBTQ, and then other churches who are like, you know, they're going to burn in hell, you know, and even if you even have a friend who's gay, you're going to burn in hell. You know, I mean, you can have these wide extremes, but the center of it is like, we believe in the Bible. That is the final word. That's the final say. And you have pastors who like they interpret it differently because there's so much different variations in the Bible,
absolutely.
You know. And that's one of the points we make in the movie, which is, you know, there is no, like, if you're saying you have to follow the sexual norm in the Bible, well, which sexual norm are we talking about? Are we talking about, you know, the polygamy era? Are we talking about Paul's, you know, saying don't get married at all, don't have sex? You know, or are we saying, you know, one man, one woman as we know today? You know, I mean.
What? A lot of, yeah, it's so much is up for interpretation. This isn't actually even that important. I wanted to ask if you'd listen to my religion and sexuality podcast I did with a pastor.
I did. It was a while ago.
It was a while ago, yeah. A lot of my interviews are a blur because I'm doing like five things at once. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I can't even remember hardly anything, except I remember loving that interview because it was all about a more liberating interpretation of the Bible and sexuality is healthy and uniting like heaven and earth and like all your parts and not just being all about the clouds, but being about the sensuality of the body. It was pretty great. It was pretty great, I have to say. I mean, you know, my show is pretty great.
We recommend it.
But we could just go over your show, because I took copious notes while I was watching
it.
Wow. Oh, yeah.
That's nerdy.
Ooh, yeah, look at all those notes.
Ooh, she's scrolling. She's still scrolling.
She puts the copulating in copious.
Ooh. and it's like, I don't really even know where to focus. I kind of know where to focus, but it's like,
Partly,
I just want to tell, thank you. I loved it. I loved it. I wanted more. I just wanted to keep watching more interviews. Like, I love this sort of thing. Like, I would love bonus material. Like, I don't know if that's going to happen at some point because you probably have
to. It will happen, yeah.
Yeah, the interviews are, I think, done really well. I loved that you kept your interview voice in. Was that your voice behind camera?
Well, both of us, yeah.
Oh, okay. I actually really enjoy that, hearing that there's a human behind the camera. There's just a little more casual. So just filmmaking-wise, I enjoyed it. And I like that you shared all points of view, including people who were like, yeah, abstinence, totes the best. Like, that's the way you got to do it. Like, the guy who said, you know, sometimes I just want to make people think. I'll, like, go up to them, like, you know, if you have sex with your hand, you know, that's technically gay. And then they look, and they're like, oh, my God, you're right. And then it's like, yeah, just make you think. You know, I just want to. It's like, no!
Oh,
no!
Scott, yeah.
I I no. Such a waste of good looks. Like, no.
Yeah, that was a hard interview. That was a hard interview.
Yeah, were you just biting your tongue? Like, were you bleeding in your mouth?
Yeah.
Yeah. We did a lot of that.
Because you pretty much just had to just shut up and he'd talk and feel, you know, and there was a piece of me in the background. It's like, just, dude, shut up. There's going to be someone that doesn't like what you're saying here in your organization, you know. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it was his words, you know. He just said it.
And... like if I just erase a lot of what I know about this stuff, because I'm not like a, you know, I don't know all the things. there's really no problem at face value with waiting till marriage to experience sexuality. Technically, it's just like, okay, that's a choice. I respect that. No big deal. So, I have two questions. One, what are some pros that you discovered about waiting till marriage to have sex? And like all the sex. I'm not talking about like, oh, you can do butt stuff before, but actually like really staying non-sexual until marriage. And then the second question after that is, what are the problems with it?
We talked to tons of people, and even people who waited until marriage, most of them like didn't say it was a good idea, which was really interesting.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, except for like, you know, well, Patrick and Bonnie, who are our first interviews, you know, Bonnie was very like, you know, I mean, this isn't in the interview itself or in the movie, but she was like, this worked for me. Like she didn't even kiss anyone until her wedding day. And, but she also has friends who grew up in the sort of homeschool world who ended up, you know, getting married super young, and they were total assholes and abusive, and they got divorced. And she's like, you know what? It probably didn't work for her, you know. And so, as much as it seems like for Bonnie it seemed to work, you know, there are other people it didn't work. So for her, she was like, this is what was good for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but like most people, I found this in my research outside of the documentary, and then the people we talked to in the documentary, they were like, yeah, we totally waited until marriage, but it really messed us up for a long time.
Oh, yeah?
Like, a lot of people didn't have sex on their wedding night, or they were really confused about their own sexual desires, or they had so much, like, residual shame from all those years of saying, like, this is such a bad thing. They weren't able to, quote-unquote, flip the switch. Like,
I've heard about that. Yeah.
And, yeah, because you spent all these years, like, your super formative years saying no to something, and then you're supposed to be like, oh, my God, it's orgasmic. That's a lot. Well, I mean, that's a lot of adjustment.
And,
so.
And you have a lot of, like, I mean, you know, a lot of guys will be watching a lot of porn. They'll be, you know, and they'll have that image on their head, like, oh, this is what it's going to be like on my wedding night, you know? And then they get there, and it's just like, it's awkward. I mean, we all know what it's like to have sex for the first time, you know? It's just like, it's not always great, you know? It's hard, it's awkward. And it takes practice.
Mine was actually pretty awesome.
Mazel tov. Mazel tov.
I don't know. It's like, I don't need to like be like win or something, but it's just like.
But you do win.
Anecdote number one to it being awesome.
Well, let's give a shout out to everyone whose first time was great.
Hey. Yeah, we salute you.
But mostly it is awkward, and it's like learning a new skill. Like, yeah. it's the first time you're on the horse.
Weird.
But I wonder if also that depends upon your partner, too. Was your partner more experienced than you?
Nope. We're both virgins.
Fuck.
That's so exciting.
I'm trying to box you in.
No, but. I like it. Let's not box her in.
No, we were like really, both of us were kind of old soul type teenagers. And like, yeah, it was just, we were both
That's
so
beautiful.
Ready. Like, it was just like, yeah.
That's beautiful. But I mean, I guess your question is like, are there any pros? I mean.
Yeah, we went straight to I was like, interesting. Yeah.
Well, you have what is often cited is like, you don't have to worry about any kind of sexual diseases. Mm-hmm. You don't have to worry about getting pregnant or any of that. You don't have to worry about heartbreak. So those are, I think, some practical things.
That was a neat, that's right. That interview where the woman said like, oh, I've never had to have my heart broken. Yeah. I was like, whoa, what's that like?
Yeah.
Whoa.
So, I mean those, if anyone out there, if that sounds like your sexuality, embrace it.
Yeah.
No. Like if it energizes someone and they're excited about waiting till marriage and it's continuing to be a positive thing in their life.
And kind of bottom line is like, understand why you're making those choices. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're making it more of like a proactive choice rather than a choice out of being like acting out of prohibition, that's better. You know.
Well, but like, I think one of the things that's great about the sex positivity movement is like it's embracing a full spectrum. You know, it's like if you're asexual, great. If you need to abstain, great. If you need to have, you know, time at the orgy dome at Burning Man, great. do it if it feels good and it's consensual. In most churches, it's a black and white thing. Mm-hmm. It's like you can have sex within marriage with, you know, opposite sex partner. That's it.
Yeah, there's only one way.
Yeah, and some churches like, well, you can't do butt stuff, you know, or you can't do oral stuff. Or other churches are like, you can do that. That's great. God's given you many orifices. Explore them, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's the rain. But it falls into this narrow category. So if you don't fit into those categories, you know, what I was alluding to earlier, it's like mm-hmm. you pop out.
Mm-hmm.
Ah. You poke out of the holes because it's like, you know, it's like water. It's going to come out.
There's mm-hmm. so many euphemisms here.
Yeah, it's in terms of, I don't even hear the puns or euphemisms anymore. It's just, they just sort of wash over me most of the time. Oh, man. God, sex before marriage. So did you find, because you said, how many people did you interview?
We interviewed almost 100 people altogether.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
That is a lot of footage to edit.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's why it took 4 years to get here. Yeah.
Right. And were you working on it from close to the beginning?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. So both of you, 4 years.
Yeah. We put a lot of our life into it. It was amazing. We spent like 6 months or 6 weeks on the road one summer just traveling around and like filming all these interviews. Mm-hmm. So we would go from like, one day we went from the pastor of Mars Hill Church. And then later that day, we interviewed Alina Gabash, who's the founder of the Center for Sex Positive Culture up in Seattle.
Oh, wow.
So we had this like fantastic spectrum of interviews and experiences, mm-hmm. and it was wonderful. It was like, we were on cloud nine the whole time. It was really amazing.
Huh. It's scheduled a sex positive interview second to like just cleanse you out a little bit.
That's exactly what we did.
And I mean, this conversation is extraordinarily biased because I encourage and I totally believe in a full spectrum of access to be who you are and how you feel.
Yeah, well, and to be clear, like we really strive to try to make this film as even-handed as possible. Mm-hmm. We obviously we have a bias, and I think, you know, we're on this show and we're talking. I think you can pick it up, mm-hmm. but. We also wanted to, like, we weren't trying to, you know, crush the head of the church, you know, and like, you know, we weren't trying to be a smear piece. We were trying to raise these questions of like, if you're in the church, like, and you know, sex is more complex than how we grew up thinking about it. And we need to broaden those things. And so like ultimately we wanted to be a helpful part of the conversation, even though we've stepped out of the church, we're no longer in the faith, and we're far more sex positive than you know we ever were, mm-hmm. you know, or anyone, most people in the church.
Yeah,
we still want to sort of have this dialogue and push this dialogue towards the church because I feel like getting
it's important.
Yeah, and because they also control the culture right now, that you want to have positive tools that they can use and go, oh, this is something that we should talk mm-hmm. about this.
Yeah, and I think there's positive to having religion in your life. I think a lot of people. Are like I've seen my Catholic because every Christmas I'll go to Mass and I see the attendance go down every year, like it's shrinking, and it's the main church on the west side, Catholic church on the west side of Los Angeles, and so it's like you guys have better change your tune about sex and stuff because nobody can, like it, you really are losing a lot of people because of that.
I have a question for you.
Oh, what?
What, like, in the world that you move and live in? Like, what are perceptions of evangelicals and sexuality?
I cannot speak to, like, my people. You know, like, do you mean, like, Silver Lake? I noticed that...
Silver Lake Trader Joe's is specific.
Oh, yeah, that Trader Joe's. It's great. Yeah, I've talked to all the cashiers. They're all real angry. I witness a lot of anger about religion and just being like, oh, God, those people... and a lot of frustration. And so many people go into sex ed, and the various aspects of sex ed because they come from such a difficult upbringing where they didn't feel heard or represented in the education or lack of education, especially Christian camp and stuff. And so I see a lot of anger. I am personally not angry. And so I'm kind of like, yeah, Catholic, Christian camp was weird. Because they told us not to touch ourselves or to have sex before marriage or else we'll be unclean and stuff. It was weird because I'd already had sex and it was awesome. So, like, sorry, you guys. Like, you know, it was like I was that person in the cabin. Like, oops. Like, what are you going to do?
You were subverting from a young age.
By 5 years old. Actually, I started kindergarten when I was 4. And I remember being in a car with two of my classmates on each side in the back seat, going to Disneyland, and me like whispering to them, like, "Hey, you guys, like, do you like really believe in God?" And then like they both were like, "Yeah." Like, they just were like, "Yeah." And I was like, "Wow, oh, okay." Like, I really was like, there is something weird here. But yeah, I went to Catholic school for many more years. And then Christian, I hung out with Christian kids because they were the nicest. And I didn't know how to make friends with people who went to like music, like concerts and stuff. I just hung out with the Christian kids. And
this group of people that congregate around the musical performance, what do you call it?
Like, they went to concert. Like, I was completely sheltered growing up. And I hung out with Christian kids. And in high school, when I went to this Christian camp, my boyfriend at the time, who was Hindu, actually, he went to the boys' side to be told not to masturbate. And I was told that I was, you know, yeah, all the stuff I just said. And then when we got back together, like after, it's like, what'd they tell you? Oh, these people. Oh, let's go get a shake. You know, I was like.
What kind of camp was this?
It was in the mountains of Big Bear. It was beautiful. And they had great, it was a great cafeteria. And it was a lot of Christianing.
Yeah, I always remember getting split up, boys and girls. Mm-hmm. Girls, yeah. We were always told to dress modestly. Like, all our conversations around, like, okay, so when I was coming of age, spaghetti straps were the mm-hmm. thing.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
And, like, the low-rider jeans. Mm-hmm. So, like, super, super tight little shirts and then tiny little jeans. And so it was all about, like, don't make the boys stumble. Like, that's what our sex conversation was, you know?
Yeah, this is a big sort of focus in the church, which is for women, don't tempt the boys, mm-hmm. you know? And the onus is placed upon women not to, you know, mm-hmm. let the boys fall into, you know, because you know how hard it is for them. You know, how fucked up is that? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's super fucked up. I didn't really get those messages, so
What did they teach you?
It was more just like, don't do it. Don't put your hand to it. Don't. No. But it was. I had a pretty liberal family life, so like, I'm not like the. It'd be better as a podcast host at this moment to be like, oh yeah, I totally get it. But like, yeah, I'm like, really?
Empathy.
Plus, I was like a super tomboy, so it was more like, come on, Sandra, wear a dress, you know? that was probably more the thing. But yeah, but I didn't do drugs and I didn't do anything bad except for I had a lot of sex all over the city of Santa Monica, everywhere. I had sex everywhere. Like, so just so you guys know.
There's a little marker in every spot.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Should do like make me like a scavenger hunt. Sandra had sex here.
Absolutely.
That'd be a great like little map game one time, you know? Like.
In a world where I at some point get my shit together and like, there's like some kind of like I'm Oprah of sex and love or something, then there could be like a Google Maps like a geocaching of all the places I had said. I would totally do that.
What would you like put at each location?
I don't know, like condoms.
But have you heard of there you go.
That's too easy.
Have you heard of letterboxing? So there's this thing, letterboxing. I'm going to just deviate just for a quick second. You cut this out if it's boring, whatever. But there's a little, like, you go to these parks, right? And there's these little boxes, and in them, there's stamps.
Uh-huh.
And people have these little notebooks, and they'll go around and they go on the scavenger hunt looking for this box. They'll pull out the stamp, and they'll stamp their book. And then I think they sign another notebook in there to say, I was here. Mm-hmm. So it's this weird, like, little collector's thing. So you could do one where it's like, you have a stamp at every little section where people can stamp, like,
yeah,
you know, I fucked here where Sandra fucked, you know?
Oh, no. Oh, there's so many security guards. Don't endanger yourself, but that would be fun if you spell out like there's a secret code, and once you get the code, it's the password to a website where you like get to find out the next thing. I love scavenger hunts and
I think we just created something.
Yeah.
This is the thing.
Next, not this year's birthday, but next year's birthday.
Uh-huh.
We'll create a scavenger hunt for you.
Around my early sexual exploits. Yes. Oh my God, this is so off topic, and I love it. Okay, getting back to you. Let's not talk about me. Boring. Oh my goodness. There's so many. One thing I like about documentaries is how it's you stayed on topic, but there were all these little moments where I'm like, oh, there's so much more to mine there and there and there. And one of them was a question about where do you think that guilt comes from, like sexual guilt. And I had a partner who would feel extraordinarily shameful and guilty after they would orgasm. And like there would just be this fall after every time. And I'd just like hold them and be like, just breathe through your feelings and just wow. this whole thing. But I mean, did you get anywhere? Did you find like what? Where's the nugget? Where does that sexual shame come from?
Brittany. It
comes from a lot of places.
Okay.
Like, okay, so one of them I think is like, if you're in an evangelical church, there's an in-group and an out-group, and that's like any social organization, right? There's always an in-group and an out-group. But I think in
what does that mean? Like the in, like the cool people, and the out people are like the not.
Yeah, people? Or okay. like, you know, it's like you're kind of obeying the rules of the group, you know? Like yes. you fit into the culture, you're listening to the hidden rules of that culture. You have to have like, you know, you basically are trying to just navigate it. Mm-hmm. And if you do or you don't. And one of those is...
Is your beard the right length?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it's like, you know, if you showed up to Comic-Con and you looked really square and you hated comic books and you hated anything fun and you hated toys and you hated TV, they'd be like, why are you here breaking mm-hmm. the rules of Comic-Con? I don't know. That's stupid. That's stupid. Okay. Anyway, so there's hidden rules and there's in-groups and out-groups. And one of the ways I think that evangelicals sort of find themselves gaining status in their social group is by being sexually pure mm-hmm. or like conveying sexual purity. Mm-hmm. Like there's a couple, Charity and John in the movie, where they say like you have to give off this air of purity even if you aren't pure uh-huh. in the way they define it. And so I think it's kind of like if you're not obeying those rules, if you've somehow disrupted the social group or your status, there's shame that comes with that. There's a lot of like rules and prohibitions put around it. There's a lot of worry about your salvation. Sexuality and salvation are very tied together. Mm-hmm. And evangelicalism, did you know that shame is not a universal emotion?
Really?
It is not a universal emotion.
Huh.
So cultures that experience shame, you know, it's not necessarily like, well, that's a given human emotion. It's like that is a socially constructed thing. So I think it comes from power dynamics and not falling in line and worrying about
control.
Your salvation.
It's control.
What God thinks mm-hmm. of you. And yeah. yeah. And it's not that people are trying. It's not like mind control in the sense of like if you saw Going Clear. It's not like there's this, you know, person who's trying to rule the world. It's just that this is part of the culture of evangelicalism.
No, but I think it's like a little ruler tap on the hand, like don't go that direction, you're trying to corral people into a certain, you know, way of being, you know, and people are always trying to stray out, and you're like, you know, no, stay on this path. Mm-hmm. Next, tap, tap, tap.
Yeah,
tap.
And that was actually something like God both loves you and is going to hit you with a big stick yeah. if you do something wrong.
Yeah, like he's going to hit you on a stick and say, but I love you.
Yeah, like that's an abusive relationship. Mm-hmm. That's literally, if someone that you're in a relationship does that, that's abuse.
Yes.
Huh.
Yes.
Interesting.
So, you know, I think you put this into a topic that is so fundamental, like sexuality, mm-hmm. it creates this boiler of just repression, because you can't, like, you know, if you can't express your sexuality in a healthy way, and when you do, you get, you know, you get punished, then it just like you said, it is very abusive, mm-hmm. you know. And so, like, I mean, you said, like, I still, you know, on occasion will experience shame around my sexuality.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, it'll pop up from time to time. And it's just something I got to go, nope, that's okay. I just got to let that go, you know.
Like shame, let's see, wait, which one's like guilt is if you feel bad because of how people might perceive you. But shame is like an ingrained, like there's something ingrained mm-hmm. wrong with you. Mm-hmm. And so you feel like it's not because anyone's watching you or Jesus is watching you. It's yeah. just there's something wrong.
Yeah.
I see. Wow.
Yeah. It's sad.
I'm sorry.
But it's okay. We get yeah. better. We journey on.
We journey on.
Yeah.
This is the thing. Okay, so this is the thing. Okay.
we just had like a therapy moment right there.
Yeah, we really did.
It's nice. You know, okay, so I asked you earlier mm-hmm. what like people that you talk to in like a sex positive community, and like we're involved in like sex positive communities as well, like on mm-hmm. a personal level, but like because we are come from this evangelical centric culture, I'm always curious, like people who don't have our lens, what they think, right? And you said that a lot of people are angry, and
like, well, they're like post
post-Christian, post-Catholic,
yeah.
Right. But, like, that anger is really, I hate the anger. No, like, I went through years of anger, and I totally understand why people are angry. And I think that it's a total bummer that a lot of the anger, I think, is really centralized around, like, sexuality, because mm-hmm. it's so core to your identity. It impacts how you think of your physical self. And mm-hmm. I don't know. I think that there's ways to sort of break out of that. And I'm really hoping that with the film, we kind of help bring empathy to the topic so that people who are angry can be like, okay, I'm fine with being angry, but I don't necessarily need to be like angry generally speaking, you know.
Mm-hmm. Are you hoping that it'll relieve, so like heal some of that?
I feel like there were two reasons why I made this film. Was one, to help people process.
Yeah.
To process where this came from and maybe bring healing into their own lives.
I felt that for myself too.
Yeah. Did you? How so?
Uh-huh. I don't know, early teen slut shaming. And I mean, not specifically like Christian camp per se, but like when after I had sex for the first time, which was great. Like it was a great experience, very healthy, lots of good communication. I had extreme, like I felt like I had lost something. Like I was mm-hmm. grieving. Like I had something that I had lost and I could never get it back. And I just remember this, like, sitting in Santa Monica in, like, some alley, just, like, because, you know, I'm a teenager, just sitting there on a box or whatever, being like, oh, what have I done? Mm. And I didn't understand what it was. Like, even though I wasn't necessarily, like, an incredibly strict, you know, Christian, like, my parents weren't pastors or anything, I still had this sense that I had lost something, and it was a huge mistake.
And that's a very common thing.
Yeah.
Because one of the metaphors that's often used is, like, you know, sex is like a present. You know, mm-hmm. and you want to give it to your partner, your husband or wife, you know, perfectly wrapped with a bow. Mm-hmm. But if someone unwraps a present beforehand, then what do you have to give? You have just empty paper.
That's all you got. You know? Got that one thing.
You know what's really fucked up? At the camp that I went to, the metaphor they used was like this. They had this orange wrapped in foil, right? And she would, this woman would give her, you know, would give her heart, this orange, to, you know, as a guy, and he would take an ice pick and, like, you know, stick the ice pick in, and then another guy would do it, and there would be, like, you know, 10 guys. I don't know what kind of, like, you know, weird orange orgy was going on here, but so she unwrapped the foil, and it was just this mangled pulp of orange, and they're like, you don't want your heart and your sexuality to be like this, do you? You know, so
I was totally expecting it to be like the chocolate orange stuff you get at Trader Joe's, where you like smack it and then it breaks into a million pieces and it's delicious.
That would work too.
Okay, but no, they just stabbed an orange and then showed that you
there's a whole story. There's a whole story
horrifying.
With it. Yeah. You know, or they use a rose and they pick the petals off the rose, you know, and every time you have sex, you pick off a petal.
Right, because every time I had sex with someone, I felt as if I were losing a piece of me. And there was just, and like, just slowly I was just, and I mean, I didn't have that many sex partners in my first 10 years of sexuality, but, you know, enough that I felt drained of my energy. And I don't necessarily know why, because now if I have sex with someone, it's like energizing, mm-hmm. you know, like my later 20s were like, woo, you know, like all those single years, good times, you know, but there was a lot of healing in between those. So mm-hmm. I remember being that stabbed orange, just a single citrus tear.
Well, that's something that, okay, so we were talking like more generally, right? Like outside of Christian circles of like, you know, do you feel that sense of loss? And I totally wish we lived in a culture where you celebrated that as a rite of passage. Mm-hmm. You know, like I wish that we all had like some kind of passage into a different phase of your life, and sex could be one of those things instead of this very like puritanical evangelical like sex is sinful and like mm-hmm. even if you had a good first experience you shouldn't probably talk to people about it.
Well, I think the flip side of this conversation within the church is, you know, what are the ramifications of sexuality, which is, you know, pregnancy, disease, and all mm-hmm. this stuff. And I think a lot of proponents of you know, abstinence only education, you know, in this purity culture, really comes from a good place. Like mm-hmm. they see like there's only one way to have sex, and if you have sex outside of this thing, you know, there's all these consequences, mm-hmm. and we want to protect the kids from this thing. Like,
yeah, it sounded quite nice actually. Yeah. Like, oh, and this beautiful marriage sex, and you're naked all the time.
Yeah,
and it's pure, like, just sound lovely.
Yeah, you know, but the problem is there's no room for messing up or exploring yourself, and you know, like, you know, since I've left my marriage and then had more sexual partners, like, I've learned so much about myself. I've learned so much about how I operate as a human being through sex, and I didn't get to do that before I got married. You know, and so I actually went to my marriage stunted. I mean, I married a wonderful person. She's wonderful, and she still is. We just didn't have great chemistry, and so I tried to make that marriage work for a long time. And then it finally started falling apart when I couldn't, you know, keep myself contained anymore, you know. But, you know, I think a lot of this rhetoric comes from a good place. It might be misguided, but it comes from a place of, like, I don't think anyone has ulterior motives. We're like, we want to fuck over the culture and make them all repressed. They're like, no, we really believe that, you know, sex and marriage is the safest, most fun way to do this thing, you know.
Yeah.
Even if it, you know.
I think black and white, that's the problem.
Black and white's the problem, yeah.
Yeah, and the fact that there's no, you know, if there's no education about if you mess up, how to take care of yourself, so that you're kind of, you know, making really poor safety choices when you do sneak around.
How do you clean up afterwards? Use a rag. Sorry.
What? What does that mean? Was it a joke? Should I laugh?
It was a joke.
Oh, okay.
Abort, abort.
I was thinking about the butt stuff. No, like, it doesn't count if it's in the butt. I think there's a Garfunkel and Oates song about that.
Yes.
Yeah, it's hilarious. Like, I blushed so hard when it happened.
That's my favorite new hashtag, is just butt stuff.
I just did a show called Butt Stuff.
That's amazing.
With Tristan Taramino. Do you know who that is?
She's
a fantastic. Yeah, okay. So,
Sex Out Loud.
Yeah, that was at the Improv on Thursday, and that will be out soon. Anyway.
That is amazing.
It was hilarious.
What was your favorite joke?
Joke?
Or, like, what was your favorite thing that you talked about, like, with butt stuff?
Oh, when we got into stories and stuff, she started talking about how she's the go-to for beginning butt fisting. So people will just, like, ask her to help, like, break them in. And the story of, I mean, foreshadowing, she had two people, two people wanted to have her do it to them on this night in a certain time frame. And she's like, oh, we're double booked accidentally. She's ambidextrous. So basically during this experience, just how the two that were receiving were interacting with each other. Like, it's a whole story, and it was very sweet.
Aww.
And we tried naming that as a sex act because a lot happened there.
We're not going to spoil. No spoilers.
Sweet double fisting.
That's too on the nose.
You don't have enough information to fully.
No, I'm not trying to name
so
it.
I'm so excited. I can't wait to hear it. I'm just so excited.
Well, you got to wait. I'm sorry. I have the audio somewhere in this room, and you can't have it. Man.
Must I abstain?
You must abstain. Abstinence.
No.
Butt stuff. Podcast listening. Abstaining. I was actually really, like, so wired that night. Just like, tell me all the butt stuff. Bah, I'm on a stage that I'm not familiar with. No, all these improv people don't understand this is a sex show. Okay, let's talk about Purity Bear. Just a moment. Because there's a moment, right, in the where you edit in stuff from, like, educational videos, and there's, like, a couple that just want to date in the front door, and it's like, do you want to come in? And then this bear. Yeah. Like, it's just a stuffed animal, like, just, like, levitates over the guy's shoulder.
It's like the bear angel.
It's not worth it.
It's like the angel
this
devil bear.
This decision could ruin the rest of your life.
Yeah, it was even more like,
she's
it was
pretty.
Terrifying. He's like,
oh no, she's cuddly.
Yeah, she.
But I'm cuddly.
Oh yeah, that was so strange. Was that a widely used educational video?
It was actually a student-made video for a Purity conference that went viral. It went viral. I think it's like, it has a whole subreddit, you know, devoted to it, you know. But yeah, I think they said, like, hey, students, make a funny video to help demonstrate Purity, and they made the Purity Bear, and they've had follow-up videos.
But the larger thing was, like, if you are feeling tempted for girls, this is like, if you're feeling tempted, like, you need fulfillment from somebody, just remember Jesus is your boyfriend. Mm-hmm. Like, have you ever heard this? Like, the whole Jesus is your boyfriend.
No, but
push?
It sounds extremely kinky.
Totally.
Right?
Totally. Totally. They would be like, write Jesus letters, like love letters, like talk to Jesus at the end of the day. Like, they would encourage you to, like, out loud, like, talk to Jesus. Like, he's your boyfriend. Like, if you need to, go ahead and, like, grab a pillow and hold the pillow and, like, cuddle that instead of turning to sexual sin and, like, putting a man before God. So, like, transfer all of your emotional and sexual energy into this character of Jesus. Mm-hmm. So that, like, that purity bear thing is, like, kind of part and parcel with the Jesus is my boyfriend movement. We even have a t-shirt that one of our interviewees, who's this totally rad bisexual pastor, or reverend, excuse me, and she came all the way out to Chicago from where she was living to interview with us, and she brought us a t-shirt, and it says, "I have a new boyfriend and his name is Jesus," and she'd gotten it at a truck stop, and it was like a for real like t-shirt.
For realsies.
Yeah.
All right.
It's so, one of my favorite, like...
Yeah, there's sometimes when she wants to turn me on that she wears that shirt, and I'm like, yeah, it's that nice.
That's right. You two fell in love working on this.
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
That is so cute!
Ew.
Wait, ew.
No, I'm just kidding. I know, it's cute.
It's super cute. It's super hot? Super cute? Super
hot and cute.
It's, yeah, it's both.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It kind of comes and goes. One depends upon the day.
Yeah, like, did one person have their hand on the mouse to, like, do some editing in the editing bay, and the other person puts their hand on the mouse at the same time, and then, like, you two looked at each other, like, oh, I have feelings.
It's like that scene in the, you know, Lady and the Tramp. We got, like, the spaghetti closer and closer. You're like, oops. No.
Oh, my God. That was so hot.
I want to reenact that scene later.
Do it.
That Sandra just described.
Editing bay, role play. Woo, woo.
Hey.
LA inside joke. Okay.
I produced the shit out of him.
Yeah, you be that.
We don't
producer.
Play that way.
Mm.
Butt stuff. No. Oh wait.
What?
This wrong way to use butt stuff.
Hashtag.
Hashtag innuendo. Okay. Okay. This is kind of a serious point that I was, like, shocked at. I mean, I don't want to give away all the juicy stuff that happens in this movie, but there was in the history section, Brittany. Going through the 1800s to now, about just purity and sexuality in America, that purity at first was used to protect white supremacy in the late 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that, because the prostitutes were often people of color, and then there would be you know, people like me popping out, like, oops, that's not white, technically.
Pretty much, yeah.
And so, like, that was like, oh, snap. That's creepy. Yeah. I mean, do you think there are tinges in that, in the purity movement that happened in the 80s and 90s? Or 93, right? So the
90s. Like mid-90s, yeah. Late 90s.
Yeah, so the first... what we were trying to show is, like, that purity culture doesn't exist in a vacuum, that it came from somewhere, mm-hmm. and that there was an iteration of it almost exactly a century before, which I think is really interesting. And, like, some historians say that, like, basically just history repeats itself every, like, couple hundred years, right? Like, every 500
years. Yeah, Battlestar Galactica, yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's coming again.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but the one in the 1800s was an effort to protect people from, like, venereal disease. Like, we say there's a statistic that was, like, a third of the nation had a venereal disease.
Oh,
at
my
some
God.
Point.
Yes.
So high. And that was true. And, like, syphilis was crazy, crazy high. And what we're trying to show is that, like, the early purity movement was, just like it was in the 1990s, was an effort to actually, like, protect people. And the groups, though, at the time that were we don't talk about too much in the film, but that were promoting this purity movement were actually, like, pro-social liberal groups that were trying to say, like, don't have sex for your own health, but if you must have sex, they were the ones who, like, promoted the first prophylactics. And it was, like, a lot of women. It wasn't just men. It was, like, women in these groups. But it kind of gets taken over by Christian groups.
Mm-hmm.
And then it has these religious overtones, mm-hmm. and it changes. And then it repeats itself in the 1990s.
But it's, like, way more extreme, it seems.
Totally. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that it could be televised. But also the AIDS epidemic was so scary.
Yeah. I mean, and I think there's these common threads of, like, the church just reacting. Something happens. So it's not like, oh, we have this spiritual concept that now we can, you know, finally apply. It's like, oh, wait, something's happening. We have to react.
And we have to recreate our structure to fit the new social thing that's happening, the culture. So, yeah. So, it wasn't intended to be, like, a racist thing, but it was, and we demonstrate in the film very clearly in the 1990s, it was rooted in an effort to preserve the fiscal physical social status of white Americans.
Yeah, I don't think the movement actually had like there was an intent to be racist, but we do show and if you look at the footage from a lot of these purity rallies, it's mostly white faces.
Oh, yeah.
And I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, the resources going to more affluent areas, mm-hmm. you know, which in America tend to be a lot of, you know, white people.
Oh, yeah. I loved the part with the African-American dude talking about how there's so little education around family and dating and stuff in African-American communities and churches, and that like 75% of the kids have
in like urban settings, yeah,
yeah, are born out of wedlock. I was like, oh my goodness. So there's the need for more resources to help educate. I know it was just a really interesting thing, and like it being about the racism for the racism, it's extra racism around sex is not just like the purity stuff. It's like attachment and survival. And it was just, I really like that section. You guys should watch it on Vimeo and stuff. Give me sex, Jesus.
.com.
I like that you liked that section. That was like my total baby for, we worked on it literally for years.
We had more fights about that section than any other part
really?
Of the movie.
Because it's so complicated. Like, we didn't get to talk about it, but like, I really wanted to include a portion of it that talks about how Kellogg's cornflakes were created to prevent masturbation. Or like, I really wanted to go into like Girl Scouts of America, Boy Scouts of America. I wanted to go into like, there's so much more you could talk about.
Yeah. I learned what 69ing was in Girl Scouts.
Did you really?
Yeah.
But how'd you learn? What was the story?
Oh, I mean, like somebody was just like, blah, 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 69. I was like, what's that? What? You don't know. And then, of course, everybody shames me for not knowing what it is. I'm like, no. And they're like, well, look at the numbers. I'm like, I got nothing, you guys. I don't know. You really had to draw it out for me.
I remember being in Girl Scouts, but just being in like junior high and high school and not being comfortable with myself at all. And people would talk about things, and I was so naive that like I would just be like, oh yeah, I totally know what that is. And I had no idea. I look back on some of those moments and I still feel embarrassment about like, there was like this one time I remember this kid named Paul caught me in a lie. I was like, I totally know what that is. And it was something to do with sex. And I didn't know at all. And he like totally called me out and I got laughed at. And I was like, oh, I'm not cool.
You need to watch that. I would watch it. That comic, Sex Criminals. Have you seen Sex Criminals, right?
It's my favorite. They're making a TV show.
Oh, that's so hot.
I know. I'm so excited. It's one of my favorites.
Okay. Yeah. Matt Fraction. Zdarsky. Mm-hmm. Have you read it?
She's told me about it. I have not.
Okay. Okay. Even if you only read like the first 10 pages or 15 pages, there's a section where you're learning kind of about how not educated they are about sex. This girl is like trying to be cool with the cool kids, and then one of the cool girls like tells her like what sex is and like how to be good at it. And so they like hide in a bathroom stall, and she starts drawing pictures of like, this is called like the double fist, and this is called like the joinky joink, and like the most possibly the most fucked up stick figure sex drawings you've ever seen, and just ridiculous, and you'll just cry because it's so funny. and I am not doing it justice. You just have to. Matt, there's a comic book store down there. Just go stand in there in 10 minutes and read it.
Okay. I promise.
All right.
I'm sorry.
It's so
I'm sorry.
Good. The other one I like that I read recently is Bitch Planet.
Oh, I haven't read that yet.
It's really good. It's really good.
Kelly Sue DeConnick, right?
Yes.
Yeah, she's so cool.
It's really good. Check it out.
She's so cool. Dude, she's so cool.
I flipped through Bitch Planet.
All right, cool. Oh my God. Okay, yes. Very exciting.
Comics in a comic book store. Who knew?
Who knew? Okay, I have a few more questions. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
How has the film been received? Have you gotten any hate mail? How you doing?
Well, I mean, it's doing really well.
Okay.
We hit almost 30,000 views on the weekend. Woo-hoo. On Vimeo, and we've just been made, I think we mentioned this already, but Vimeo staff pick, which is awesome.
Yes.
We've had articles in Slate and
The Guardian
and Atlantic. So that's great. Positive, very positive. And we've had some people who are like, we're praying for your soul.
Oh, that's nice.
That's nice.
Yeah. Or it's like, you know, you heathens, you know, you're going to experience this in hell or whatever. I mean, we've had that.
So minimal. That's what's been so crazy, is that I'm waiting for the like shitstorm to hit, and we're ready for that. But like, people really want this movie, mm-hmm. and we were hoping they would. And I think we are really excited that people don't hate it too much. Yeah. Like, I think we're just like getting our, you know, like, okay, because it's such a fragile thing, right? Like, you put yourself out there for something you've worked on for so long, and to not have the first response be super negative, I feel like we're like little baby birds and we're getting ready to fly. Aww. And then, like, as soon as we fly, there's probably gonna be like a pterodactyl that like bitch slaps us down, you know, and we're like, but like in the meantime, we're flying, we're learning how to fly, and it feels really good.
Oh, you're soaring like eagles, you two. Soaring like real eagles. Oh, that's fantastic. Okay, good. Yeah.
We will.
It's doing good. I mean, you can do better.
Oh, absolutely. This is just the beginning.
Yeah,
this is just
the beginning. Tip of the iceberg.
Yeah. We actually did this really, there was this There was a screening last night up in Seattle. Mm-hmm. It was by this group called Thank God for Sex.
Uh-huh.
And it's a Christian group that's promoting like, sex positivity, mm-hmm, in many, many different forms.
They had a boob cake.
Oh.
Which was cute.
Yeah, it was very cute.
But they had like a fantastic panel
very
of like...
Unchurch. It's very unchurchy.
Yeah, mm-hmm, of like sex positive educators and pastors and all sorts of stuff. And so we were just super excited. So even if it's just like, even if we don't exceed 50,000 views, which we will, but...
It's going to happen.
Well,
but it's just cool to know that like that kind of stuff is happening.
I will say, yeah. I woke up the night that I posted it. I didn't announce it until like, you know, 9 a.m. But somehow someone found the link, and he wrote me this email first thing in the morning. I get this email, and it was basically like, oh my God, like I came from a big Christian family as well, like, you know, Chris did, who is one of our subjects, and I'm gay, and I, you know, my family totally, like, you know, disowned me, and I've been trying for years to explain to my friends what it was like growing up in that movement.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, this is the first thing I've ever seen that actually describes what I've done, what I went through.
Yes.
And he's like, thank you. And after I read that, I still get all emotional when I read that. I'm like, what we did was, you know, it was worth it. Yeah. If nothing else, for that one person, it was worth it.
Absolutely. I mean, the creative field and art, and I mean, you're directing stuff, and I mean, you've gone artistic as well, it seems, right, Brittany?
Oopsies.
It just seems like, I don't know, because sometimes I struggle because the stuff that I create is so like sort of straightforward. Like, I'm not like shrouding it in metaphor, you know. I'm not like giving characters like the situation. I just want to talk about the stuff, you know, and hopefully make people laugh and have a good time. So my question is, you find that this documentary is like feeling more professionally and artistically satisfying than the huge, or is it just all part of a piece? Like, is all of your work?
No, we talk about how like I feel like I've peaked early. Like, this project...
You're a rookie and you've won the World Series. What do you do next?
Okay, so this movie literally changed our lives. Like, everything about my life changed in the mm-hmm. process of making this movie. Mm-hmm. Our relationships totally changed. You know, our lives together joined, not just professionally, but romantically.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I had deconverted from Christianity, like lost faith or whatever, right before I started working on the film. But he ended up leaving Christianity while working on the film.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I thought you were like far long ago.
I was already on the way out, you know. But I think my marriage was sort of keeping me sort of hanging on mm-hmm. a little bit, because it's like I was just like that Hail Mary, like, God, if you're out there, just show me a sign. And then no signs came, and I started making the movie. I'm like, okay, let me just figure this out. And I'm like, nah, I'm done.
Mm.
No. But I mean, but in my head, I'd already sort of made the decision, mm-hmm. even though I didn't actually go through it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but so for us, it was like everything changed so dramatically, and it's such a personal project because of how our identities changed that we will never, like, we've talked about this, we've talked to other filmmakers, we will never have a project that it's this personal again, that it means this much, you know, like literally for the last 4 years. We were joking the night before the premiere, we were sitting there having a quiet dinner, and then we had to go like film an interview for a screening in Shanghai, and so then things got like chaotic, but we had this like moment of calm where like it's like we're sending our kid off to college. Like,
empty nest syndrome,
because we've spent every like spare moment and non-spare moment working on this, and we're like, it's kind of like they're going, we have empty nest syndrome, but they're still kind of a little shithead, and we still kind of have to manage it a little bit, and it still takes some work, but you know, we'll never have a project like this was our one.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think for me, like when I came down to LA, I'm like, oh, I want to direct. I want to do something. And I kept circling these themes, mm-hmm. because I knew in my heart there was something wrong with the way I was raised, you know, in evangelicalism. And I just wanted to explore it. And I mm-hmm. wanted to let people know that there's something up here. And then I just kept trying all these different projects and nothing, you know, it's hard. I mean, this is a very niche kind mm-hmm. of, you know, topic. And so this documentary was like the fruition of that. It was like 10 years of trying to figure out what do I do with this? What do I do with this? And, you know, the documentary came out of that. So, you know, I mean, sure, so I'll do other stuff, but I don't know if it'll be this deeply mm-hmm. personal, this deeply searching. Like you said, I don't think it's going to like cause me to like lose something, lose my faith or regain my faith or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, or regain my faith in something else. I don't know. But yeah, this is I bled on this film. I bled.
I'm just like, I had a lot of visuals. So I was just like, fluid bonding. This is a sex podcast. Sounds like it was a transformative experience for everyone involved, and people watching it are being transformed and healed. Like, it's just like, it's magic.
Yeah.
You did it. Did any of your interview subjects give you any feedback after? Like, whoa, that interview really opened up some stuff? Or, 'cause they were really opening. Like, I loved the woman who found out about sex through fan fiction.
Lacey.
Yeah, she was great.
Fantastic.
Yeah. I read a lot of X-Men fan fiction.
She was the interview that I first heard the term sex positive from.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because she used to work at the Ren Fair, I think, or something like that.
why didn't I work at the Ren Fair as a teenager? I feel like I missed out on so much. Ugh.
And she mentioned
this. What was one of your first jobs when you were a teenager?
I worked at an In-N-Out Burger. Was my first job at 16. I worked at a costume store, make-believe costumes in Santa Monica from 16. I still work there during Halloween. I wear a giant like magician's turban and I go like, what would you like to be for Halloween? And then I dress them up and send them off.
Oh, that's
really
so
fun.
Awesome. Yeah. Okay,
thank
so you
God
gotta, you gotta
working.
Post your like your hours this year so we can all go visit you.
Sure, or you can just text me. We're like best friends now, you know.
Done.
So, yeah.
I was just gonna say, I'm glad I'm not doing my first job, which was working for my asshole orthodontist. I was like 13. I'd clean up after all the shit. Yeah, he was a total asshole.
Oh, he's an orthodontist.
Imagine if I go back every summer and say, like, "Hey, kids, here's your braces."
No, not the same. Not the same.
No.
Yeah, no, I didn't start working in sexuality until I took a break from production and was like on a train, like going like south to like Charleston. Was like, oh, I want to be a sex therapist. That's what I want to do. Why don't I?
Wait. And so then what did you do after that? So you were like, you had this revelation, and then what happened?
Well, I mean, I was doing a 3-month sort of backpacking around America thing because I hadn't seen most of the U.S. And then I came back and was depressed for like another month and a half. And then I started working at the Pleasure Chest, but mm-hmm. I'd already worked at Babeland for some time. So I kind of knew like, oh, what makes my heart sing? Oh, the entire couple months that I worked at Babeland. Oh, maybe I should. Oh, like you realize what your true passion is in the world.
So
right?
Then what did you
That's
do?
So great.
What? And then what? And then what? And then I masturbated. And then I went and got dinner. Like when I actually really want something, I seem to get it really fast. Like when the first day on a film set, I showed up, I was a PA, like I really knew nothing. By the end of that day, I was working for set dressing, and the next day I was promoted to like second AD. Like I was really like aggressively. I mean, of course it was a shitty indie film, but like it was still like I was like, I want an AD. I could tell. I read the description online. I know this is what I want to do. And like the minute I got to the Pleasure Chest, I'm like, I want to be a workshop person. I want to teach all the people, all the BJs, all the butt stuff. And like within like 2 months, I was like I was running the workshops and like running the whole department of that. Like it was just like I was just so like So,
they're like,
yeah,
well, we're not going to get rid of her, so we might as well just give it to her.
Yeah, I could just tell being amongst my people, like, I was still, like, obsessive about sex ed and pleasure techniques. So, I don't know. I love that you're asking me questions. It's just like, you know, that's, I just really like doing what I do.
Isn't that amazing?
It is.
When you just feel coherent.
Yeah.
Like, a full, coherent person.
I feel integrated.
Integrated.
Yeah, I feel, like, really authentic. Like the most authentic, I think, that I've ever... And doing this podcast is almost like a weekly practice of I mean, this podcast is a three-year-old that will never grow up. Like, so it's not like I will never probably send this off to college, you know? But it's also like almost a meditative practice that I have to do that I love. And it's hard sometimes. The intros of my show lately. But I feel like it's actually really helped me grow as a person and fully integrate. So there's a lot of healing that happened from when I started to now.
Interesting,
so,
yeah. I mean, and that's how I feel like for the documentary.
Yeah, you know? I bet.
But I often go back think like, could I become sex nerd Matt? You know, I mean,
yes, you can.
But is that who I am?
Oh,
I don't know, because I mean, when you do this, like, there are a lot of people at the beginning of this like, be careful, like, you could become known for the sex person that everyone's going to come and talk to you about sex, which is true in a little bit. There's a lot of people like we often end up talking about sex with all our friends because of, you know, the documentary. I don't know if I want to turn it into a life, but it's almost like the life has found us in a sense, you know?
Yeah.
Once you have this out there, it's like everyone's going to know, you're the sex Christians. All right.
But you're already in the TV stuff. Like, you're already kind of established, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So like, that's good. You're not just starting off.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But for me, it's always like, is this like, do I want to diversify? Do I want to, you know, because there is something powerful about like saying, I'm going to be talking about sex for the next 10 years of my life. Mm-hmm. This is what I'm going to do, you know? And for you, like, you are a fucking nerd and you like to get into it all and you like disseminate that information to everybody, which is beautiful, which is great. You know?
Well, but here's the thing. I'm aggressively want to learn things. So like I could talk to an accountant and I could have an accounting podcast and it would be awesome. You know, like I love things, you know, like tell me about the spreadsheets. And so like I'm obsessive about baggage, travel luggage. Like I love packing.
Do you have a packing episode?
I guess it's, like literally. No, I'm not talking about in your pants packing. I'm talking about like.
No.
Getting all the.
I want to know how you fold your socks. I want to know how you fold your socks.
I actually flatten them out, and then I find in between where the handle gets pulled up and down, like that's perfect sock laying places, right? Yeah, you're nodding. Yeah, Brittany knows.
I know, and I like packing a good tight bag.
Oh god.
And I like packing a nice tight car. Like when we go on road trips, we go on lots of road trips. I'm like,
she'll repack my stuff.
You suck at this. Please let me read.
Although
it.
I do spend a lot of time on Lifehacker watching packing videos.
Yeah. Like, it doesn't get in your brain at all. It doesn't.
I try.
You just watch. You're purely an observer. I do. You're not a learner.
And I do like the four-way pant thing, and you fold them over, and you're supposed to pack more in, but it just never quite works.
The thing is, the sadness of the internet is that ebags.com. I used to be obsessed with them because they would take luggage and fill, like, they would actually give you the square footage or square inches of the luggage, and they no longer do that, but because what they had to do is fill the entire thing with BBs and all the pockets and then measure the BBs, and so they don't no longer do that, but that's how I would make sure that I got the maximum amount of space for whatever the carry-on dimensions were.
Wow.
At the time I was like I was calling. So anyway, okay, why are we talking about this? Basically, because I love, what I've learned about being, because I've been like the sex person for a long time now, is that like when I go on shows like The Young Turks, like they have me on a lot for panels and things, and we'll talk about non-sex topics, I find, and I think is really important about the sex positive perspective, is that it does permeate everything. And so even though I might be talking about a TSA thing or like a foreign thing or like the tools that like we absorb, like rolling around in this stuff really do help us, I think, be better, more authentic people in the world, no matter what we're talking about. So I think, you know, like right on stuff. Like, I didn't really have a point except yay you.
No, I like that. You know what I really like is that we can change like over time, you know, like I think that's probably one of the coolest things about being a human, even though it's really hard sometimes. But like, I remember thinking that I was supposed to figure out what my life was going to be and then kind of pursue this one path. So like, if I had pursued the path that I thought I was going to have when I was younger, I would be a really unhappy person now. Yeah. And like, there was a lot of heartbreak and like a lot of really hard stuff that happened between then and now. And there's going to be a shit ton more that happens after that. Mm-hmm. But as hard as that is, like sometimes we talked about this sometimes, like, I wish I was one of those people that could kind of just like batten down the hatches and just like, okay, well, I made this decision and so I'm just going to stick with it, you know, like a lot of people do in their marriages or in other like career choices and things like that. And I'm like, maybe that would be easier. But I don't think it is all the time, you know.
It wouldn't work for you.
It wouldn't work for me. I like feeling like that authenticity or that integration. And, you know, kind of like you said, I feel better now about myself and my, in my world than I ever had at any point in my life.
Yeah, but, and I think for me that, like, what I wasn't allowed to do or I didn't allow myself to do was to explore myself in ways that would help me learn about myself. I sort of, you know, between like how I was raised for my family and what I was given, you know, the information I was given in my church, my life was predetermined for me. And so when I landed in that life, you know, like some of it worked, but a lot of it didn't. I'm like, this isn't working, you know? And so I spent a lot of time just praying about it at first, like, you know, God, change this, like change me. Or then it was like, no, change the situation. And then I realized, no, I just need to like go and explore and figure myself out.
We're like super definitely over time, but I want to ask like a quick little thing on top of what you just said, which is, did you feel like adventure and discovery and experimenting, like even not even sexually, but just generally, did you get a sense that there you'd probably accidentally sin if you did that? Like, was there part of the danger of expanding your worldview?
When I was in that worldview, yes. Okay.
At the time, I try and wrap my head around different perspectives, and there seems to be a like this vague sense that I'd better not find out stuff that I don't know now, because if I like it and it turns out to be sinful or something, then I can never go back.
That's one thing, is like, don't ask questions.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's for, like, I don't know if that's for a lot of religions, but definitely evangelicalism. It's like, don't ask too many questions. Like, ask questions within a defined set.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like there's two.
But not outside that.
There may be two. Maybe I'm reducing it too much. But like in my life, with my friends, I feel like there's two main courses of action. One, which is like, experiment a lot and then get married. And then, like, the experimenting is done. Mm-hmm. You know, the family is what's important. And I'm not going to do anything outside the marriage. And not going to, you know, it's the adventure is the family. And then the other side is like, don't do anything beforehand, because the path I took was like, I want to be pure in my marriage, because if I'm pure in my marriage, I'm going to get all the great porn sex that I want, you know? And,
oh yeah, that idea that was in the film too. Like,
porn sex will come if you stay pure beforehand. And that was the path I took. I mean, I'm joking a little bit. I didn't really think it was going to be this crazy ass porn sex, but there was that element of like, this is going to be amazing because I waited. Because I did the thing that all my friends couldn't do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have a question for you.
Okay.
What did you take away from the film? Like, what did you think the film was trying to say?
That I should have waited till marriage. No. I don't want to give away the ending, because there is a really lovely sort of look to the future and sort of a synthesis that comes out of the journey of the film. So, like, are you okay with me talking about?
Yeah.
Just, there really is kind of, and through a story of a couple of lesbians, like two women finding love in each other, and that struggle around homosexuality and what is this relationship. And it's sort of like, and I think that's a theme that I've talked in other podcast episodes about when you find yourself so outside what you're taught is okay, you get to kind of explore and make your own way, and that can be extremely healthy. And so it was kind of like, I don't know, I walked away feeling like it was okay to be me and find my own way. Like, I just felt good. Like, yeah. Yeah, I would. Oh.
Can we hold hands?
We're holding hands. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Circle of trust.
Yay. Oh, I'm glad. Okay, I did it. I did the right answer.
It's the right answer for you.
Right answer.
For you, it's the right answer.
Cool. Thank you.
No right answer.
I'm taking it.
I'm just happy that you had an answer.
Good. And how are you two doing? Feeling like, do you feel changed, or do you feel like, what did you take away from it? Final thought.
Final thought. Well, I mean, it's hard to say, because I mean, I changed so much. Mm-hmm. So what I took away from it was like, sex is not black and white. Mm-hmm. It's gray. We need to have a conversation. You need to figure out what's right for you, what works for your body. You know, I've become so sex positive in this whole thing. Like, do it. Like, if abstinence works, that's great. You know, I'm not shaming you, you know, but if you want to have sex once before you get married, I think you're going to be okay. I don't think you're going to burn in hell for that. You know, just be safe, you know, ask questions. Don't be an asshole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Don't be an asshole. That's generally, I think Jesus would agree with that.
Yeah, I think he would.
Yeah. How about you, Brittany?
I think that because I tend to be much more rigid in how I think about things, just the world, and that's why I was well suited to academia for as long as I was. But I think I just have a lot more empathy for people. And I don't know that I was necessarily like surprised by any of the things that we heard in our interviews. But I think just through that process and us really struggling, because we, you know, cut together a version of the film that was like, burn it all down, you know, like burn it. And then we did another one that was like, let's just talk about people's stories and let's just honor them and let's not really have a point of view. And I think we landed kind of somewhere in the middle. And through that process of struggling together and struggling with people around us and our team and really genuinely trying to honor those who had contributed a lot to the film and people who were waiting for the film, just having a lot more empathy and being like, we're just trying to figure ourselves out. Like, we're all doing our best. That's all we're doing. No matter what our religion is, no matter what anything is, we're just trying really, really hard. And sometimes we do better than others. We're better versions of ourselves than other times. So that's what I learned.
Tony, what'd you learn? Tony Thaxton, everyone. I'm putting you on the spot.
Tony.
It's okay. Your aura is telling me everything. I get it. Okay. I totally hear you. Yeah, you're welcome. Oh, my goodness. So where can people find you out in the world? Do you have Twitter handles or an email? People can email you at, or just go to givemesexjesus.com. What are your thoughts?
Givemesexjesus.com. I'm at Barbara Matt.
And I'm at Britlin Motch.
Britlin Motch.
And you guys need to spell those things.
Barbara Matt, B-A-R-B-E-R, like a haircut.
Ooh.
M-A-T-T, Barbara Matt.
Excellent.
And I'm B-R-I-T-T-L-Y-N-N-M-A-C-H, Britlin Motch.
But just to keep it simple, just search out Give Me Sex Jesus, you'll find everything.
And
so
we're on at Give Me Sex Jesus, and we're on Instagram and Facebook. And
if you forget it, I'm probably going to name this episode that, Give Me Sex Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Yay. Oh, so another thing that's cool is like we kind of want to give the film back to everybody, which is why we released it for free. But you can also do a living room screening. Yeah. So like you can basically just get your friends together. And what we're trying to do is just like keep a record in some degree of like who's showing the film. So like we have everything from like a Sunday assembly who's screening the film to like a really major church in Texas. Mm-hmm. And then we have people who are just doing like their Bible studies. So we're kind of just posting it on our website if you give us the information that you're hosting it, and you can have it for free.
Yeah, sex positive centers are doing it. So, and there's atheist groups. It is really kind of, it's amazing how wide of a berth, you know, we've thrown. I'm totally mixing my metaphors, but it works.
You know, I hear you. So, yeah. Birthing new language, new metaphors. It's great. Thank you so much for being on the show and taking some time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
This is a, you know, bucket list check.
I'm flattered. Thank you. Ah, and as we say on the show, go team fun.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.